Welcome to CCC's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally. CCC began this podcast in 2006, before there were iPhones and iPads, a time before Twitter, and of course, long before Zoom. The world has changed in a decade and a half, and now Beyond the Book is changing too. Beginning in January 2021, CCC's podcast name becomes Velocity of Content. Velocity of Content is CCC's platform for thought leaders and industry experts operating at the speed of content to share new ideas, observations, and knowledge. We're changing the name to Velocity of Content, but you don't have to change your listening habits. Stay right here to stay on top of emerging industry trends and challenges. Thanks for listening. And now, I hope you will enjoy this episode of Velocity of Content, CCC's podcast series. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally. It's Friday, December 4th, 2020. Every week we check in with Publishers Weekly for the latest news and analysis on books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW Senior Writer, joins me again today. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So while we were away for the Thanksgiving break, Andrew, Penguin Random House parent company Bertelsmann announced it was acquiring Simon & Schuster. Catch us up on the deal.
Yeah, big news indeed is Bertelsmann, the parent company of Penguin Random House, announced this week that it had reached an agreement to buy Simon & Schuster from ViacomCBS for a hefty price of $2.175 billion. So when I say this is a big deal, this is literally a really big deal. Our listeners will recall that Simon & Schuster was hoping to haul in around $1.7 billion, and my boss, Jim Milliot, was totally on point when he published a piece just days before the purchase was announced saying that $1.7 billion was a bargain price. Indeed, in the end, ViacomCBS netted what I would call a real premium price for the publisher, half a billion more than the number that had been batted around. The purchase combines the country's largest, Penguin Random House, and the third largest trade publisher, Simon & Schuster. And that company will now have combined revenues of probably around $3 billion. And it leaves the rest of the big five, now the big four, in the dust. In fact, let's just say we have the big one now, followed by, I don't know, let's call them the large three.
Well, if you do that, it'll be large, but not in charge. And that's really the point, because when we talked about a potential deal on this program 2 weeks ago, you reviewed the potential antitrust issues for Bertelsmann, which in 2013 acquired Penguin and then merged it with Random House to form the mega publisher that is Penguin Random House. So the S&S deal already has critics voicing opposition.
Yeah, and the opposition has been really intense. You know, not unexpected, no one's surprised, but right off the bat, we're seeing like the Authors Guild, for example, saying the sale would create a huge imbalance in the U.S. publishing industry. And their concerns are not off base because fewer independent imprints means fewer bidders for authors' manuscripts, and that will drive down advances. And this has been the effect of consolidation we've seen over decades, of course. And of course, the Authors Guild called on the Justice Department to step in and challenge the deal. Somewhat surprisingly to me was how strongly the American Booksellers Association CEO Allison Hill also came out against the move. In a public letter, Hill also called on the Justice Department to challenge the deal and to ensure that, and I'll quote her here, to ensure that no further consolidation of power be allowed in the U.S. book publishing industry. The Association of American Literary Agents used to be the AAR, the Association of Authors Representatives. They were more muted, surprisingly, than the other organizations. They didn't actually call for the Justice Department to look at the deal, though they expressed grave concerns over the consolidation of the industry that they said could diminish the diversity of viewpoints and the vibrancy so essential to the future of books. Now, all the experts I spoke to said, you know, that's less of a concern, right? The diversity of the market, you know, this is more of a marketplace issue than a marketplace of ideas issues, they say. In other words, objectively speaking, there are more ways than ever to get your book or your ideas out these days. The real concern is who's profiting off this. But everyone does agree that, yeah, in theory, those with the biggest megaphone do get their voices heard the most.
All right. So 2 weeks ago, you pretty strongly voiced your opinion, Andrew, that a potential S&S buy by Bertelsmann would not be stopped by antitrust regulators. Well, now that we have such a deal in place, are you standing by that take?
Yeah. And, you know, I'll reiterate my point from 2 weeks ago. Is consolidation in the book business an issue? Absolutely. Yes. And, you know, I too long for the good old days when there were dozens of independents and imprints all bidding on books. But that's the thing about the good old days. They're the old days. And where we are right now, I just don't see any reason to believe that the DOJ is going to find a reason to intercede here. But that may just be my cynicism talking. You know, I reached out to some lawyers and some antitrust experts this week, and Cleveland Marshall College of Law professor Chris Sagers, who was my go-to guy on the Apple antitrust case, you know, back earlier in the decade, and the author of a 2019 book called The United States versus Apple Competition in America, he told me that he thinks the deal may be in some jeopardy, and here's why. As a practical matter, regulatory agencies over the last few decades have rarely brought serious challenges to deals that concentrate power at the top from, you know, less than, say, four firms down to three. In other words, Sagers explains that as long as a deal leaves four major firms in a market, the agencies have been unlikely to sue and at most have asked for concessions as a condition to approving a deal. But size does matter, he points out. And even though this deal would still leave four major publishers at the top of the book market, because Penguin Random House was already so large prior to its acquisition of SNS, the metrics used to calculate, and this is the important thing here, market concentration, which includes this test called the Hirschman-Herfindahl Index, or the HHI, that would put this deal in peril. You know, the thinking he explains is that there's more fear from a market in which one or a very few large firms face only much smaller competitors because none of the smaller firms can hurt that big firm by charging lower prices. And in contrast, a market where all the firms are closer in size, which we sort of had in the Big Six era, it's harder for one firm in that scenario to make the others do anything. And if firms try to form a cartel, it's easier for one of them to just say, you know what, forget it. I'm going to cut prices and I'm going to steal other people's market share. The wild card with this, of course, is that we don't know what numbers the regulators are going to use to measure the book market. In one recent statement, the Authors Guild put Penguin Random House's share of the book market combined with SNS at over 50% or around 50%. No doubt they're focusing on Penguin Random House's dominance of sort of, you know, this subset of best-selling commercial books, which, of course, the major publishers derive significant revenue from. On the other hand, when you factor in firms like Amazon and competition from indies in the self-publishing market, which has grabbed a lot of market share in the genres especially, Penguin Random House global CEO Marcus Dole says Penguin Random House's market share is actually about 14% and Simon & Schuster about 4%, so less than 20% for the combined firms. So you've got a big discrepancy there. We just don't know how the DOJ is going to look at that. And one more relevant wrinkle that Professor Sagers pointed out to me is whether or not regulators could even reasonably ask for concessions in this deal to still make the deal work. In other words, the logic of this deal is to consolidate trade publishing. So if you're going to force Penguin Random House to sell off some imprints of Simon & Schuster or sort of dilute, you know, the trade publishing that they're, you know, merging to form, then why not just block the deal?
All right. So on Tuesday this week, trade show organizer Reed Pop announced that Book Expo and Book Con are being retired. The move comes as less than a complete surprise, though it leaves New York City, the nation's publishing heart, without a major trade publishing event, at least for now.
Well, we've been wondering about this for weeks, right? Especially as, you know, June shows in London and Bologna were announced. But this week we learned that U.S. Book Publishing's biggest trade show is being, quote, retired. Show organizer Reed Pop announced that Book Expo, along with BookCon and Unbound, will not be held in 2021 after being canceled in 2020 due to the pandemic. Remember, that show was hastily replaced with a virtual show that for being done on 3 weeks' notice, I have to say wasn't half bad. But we're not even getting that this year. No virtual show, just retired. In its announcement, Reed Pop, which is the pop culture event-focused subdivision of Reed Exhibitions, said that uncertainty surrounding in-person events led to the decision to retire the current iteration of events. Show director Jenny Martin noted that the pandemic arrived at a time in the life cycle of Book Expo and BookCon where the company was already examining how to restructure the events. And I think that's a polite way of saying, you know, and I think it's obvious to everyone who's attended BEA over the last decade, the show was struggling, and it had been for some time. And, you know, in the wake of the COVID-19 crisis, well, game over. Indeed, Reed Exhibitions convention business at large has been hammered by COVID-19. You know, various media reports say that through the first 9 months of 2020, revenue's down 70%. There have been massive layoffs and cuts. You know, a British company, Reed, said full year revenue for this year for its exhibits business was going to come in around 330 million to 360 million pounds. And that's after a range of cost lowering initiatives, including layoffs. Total costs for the division were supposed to be about 530 to 540 million. Meanwhile, that means a huge loss, over 200 million pounds. And that's not including one-off costs that were related to, you know, restructuring and cancellations from COVID-19. So big losses. And even bigger, Reed Exhibitions revenue in 2019 was 1.3 billion pounds. So struggling indeed. Again, the news is probably not a surprise to anyone. I think there are probably a lot of opinions and a lot of negative opinions about what the show actually contributed to the publishing business, but it makes me a little sad. I really enjoyed seeing everyone here in New York every year. It was always hectic. It was always fun. And, you know, I hope post-COVID that we can find a way to create a publishing event that can work. I mean, as you mentioned, this is New York, after all, the publishing capital of the world.
Indeed, it sounds like people are already starting to think about what future show could be and what it might look like. And a report in PW suggests that publishers are open to, well, something taking Book Expo's place.
Yeah, despite Book Expo not getting a lot of rave reviews in recent years and more than a few restructuring, shall we say, or format changes or day changes, most book insiders contacted by PW for a story this week, they expressed little interest in returning to the same version of Book Expo, this massive Javits Big Booth style show. But virtually everyone hoped that some type of annual event could be created. You know, John Malinowski, who's the president of Combined Book Exhibit and annually one of Book Expo's largest exhibitors, pointed out that unlike the major European book fairs like London, Frankfurt, and Bologna, which are clearly right shows, the purpose of Book Expo was really unclear. You know, many in the publishing world have asked, you know, what kind of show is Book Expo? And John thinks that, you know, he's always viewed it as a show for the business of publishing. And that encompasses more than just a single sector of the industry, like the rights trade. And indeed, the idea of creating this more business-to-business focused event for publishers appealed to many of the people we talked to, notably two of the biggest industry players, Ingram and Penguin Random House, express support for a reimagined industry event. Penguin Random House CEO Marcus Dole, who's no doubt a power broker now, especially if they have, you know, Simon & Schuster, said he looked forward to working with industry partners to explore a, and I'll quote him here, a newly imagined event where we can all come together to celebrate books and their essential role in our society and culture. And those are nice words, but if I'm being honest, I don't know what that means, right? I mean, I celebrate books and their essential role in my culture and our culture every day. We all come together to celebrate books and their essential role in our culture. I think we got to do a little bit better than that to define what a book industry show in New York is going to be. I think my friend Guy Gonzalez said it best on Twitter, and I'll just quote him here. You know, COVID-19 may have been the final nail in the coffin that BEA had sort of been laying in for years, but the inability to build BookCon, which was the public-facing show, into something with more staying power, that's as much about industry myopia as any failure on Reed Pop's part. And I have to say, I totally agree with that assessment.
We appreciate your analysis. Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, thanks for joining me today on CCC's podcast.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up next on the show, Nairobi-based Book Bunk restores iconic library buildings in the Kenyan capital and elsewhere across the African nation. That work, though, goes well beyond bricks and mortar. Book Bunk is creating spaces for knowledge production, shared experiences, cultural leadership, and information exchange, says Book Bunk co-founder Angela Wanchuka.
It is an act of imagination because we wanted to believe that there was a kind of different future that's possible, not just for the libraries as structures, but also as places for imagination and places for expression. This happens at a time also that we think there are a lot of interesting things that are happening in terms of legislating the creative space here. So it's a kind of confluence between, well, let's have a conversation as well about what the obligations of government are towards providing such spaces, but also fully resourcing them. So it's been a really interesting experience, to say the least, because as you can imagine, I mean, the project itself is born out of the neglect that these spaces have endured for decades. So it comes out of the imagination also at the same time as it does out of a need for better and more.
Rebuilding and reimagining Kenya's libraries. Next on CCC's podcast. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening and join us again soon for another podcast from CCC.